Well, where will I start then? For introduction, perhaps. It's been over 20 years ago, back in my country. I will keep my country secret for a moment, and later you will know why. I try not to name any names or any locations specifically, but in general, I will tell my story. Anyway, it was about more than 20 years ago when my friends insist me, yeah, you have to now start writing books because of the stories that I told them, what happened to my life and where I've been traveling and how I've been traveling. So I said to them, listen, I'm not feeling myself like I'm any special person, because I met during my travels. I traveled in Russia back then, because I'm from a Soviet country, so much I can tell, ex-Soviet country. And I traveled across whole Russia, and I met there foreigner travelers during my trips. And who I helped a little bit, and they told me their stories where they've been traveling and then how they ended up in Russia, just crossing it. And I told my friends that, listen, I don't feel special, because I met on my travels other people who've been in way crazier ways of traveling, crazy places. I mean, places where I wouldn't go, probably. But the difference was that they traveled with money. We had money, the foreign travelers. And I've been traveling without money and surviving during my trips across whole Russia. That's how my friends were thinking that I should write books about that. But yes, I wasn't ready back then, and life was very busy as well. So that's the introduction, why I'm beginning these podcasts, still hiding my name a little bit, because thinking back now, maybe it was really crazy a little bit what I did and how I survived without money in Russia. So basically, I traveled entire Russia several times, to Middle East, to Far East. Siberia I was 3 times, I was in Tian Shan Mountains several times, 4 times I think I was there, and in northern Russia, but not north of Siberia, I was more like European side, north to Kolan, Kolski Poluostrov it's called in Russia, but it's probably Kolan half island. It's Murmansk is the top there, closer to the north. Quite a big city, Murmansk. And yeah, Vladivostok is the farthest point I've been in the Far East in Russia. But the point is that I didn't travel with planes. I traveled hitchhiking most of the time. Sometimes I took trains, also on cargo trains in some locations. I just jumped on cargo trains, and when I was young, actually, I trained hard. I grew up in a very little town, like 20,000 people, and the local train station, I was just training on cargo trains, jumping on and jumping off. And because I studied martial arts beginning from 9 years old, it was just part of my personal training, which I think only one friend of mine knew that I did that crazy these crazy things. And yeah, to tell honestly, couple of trains been when I was young. I was maybe 14, 15 then, when I jumped the trains and practiced on them. And a couple of trains had been stopped because of me. I think one passenger train and one cargo train was stopped because somebody saw it. Somebody's hanging on the train in the back. They probably radioed up that something is happening there. And I got very quickly lost when train stopped. They couldn't catch me. Anyway, that's just have an idea that probably, yes, my training and my travels were a bit crazy. But I wanted to travel. I wanted really to travel. That was my hobby. I always wanted to go away from my Soviet little country. And the main reason, because I didn't like the climate. It wasn't politically aware or anything. It was anything bad, because life was... we all lived in happy, I don't know. Счастливое детство in English means... happy youth. We were all in happy youth, so I didn't think about because of I was living a bad life. I didn't know any better life, but I just didn't like the climate. And of course, I knew that the world is round and there are better areas with better climate and palms, etc. So I always wanted to go away from my country, but the traveling was I began traveling. Probably when I was 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, I don't remember. I was very young, and that was one friend of mine. We were crazy. And there was one foreigner cargo truck, which was just next to our house parked. And we asked the guy, can he take us just to show the car, just a little bit, just a few miles out of town? And he took us. It was like back in Soviet times, we trusted each other. It wasn't like paranoid, like feeling about each other, about what can happen. You know, he took us and took like out of town. It was little town, but he took us out of town. And I remember it was funny to come back to home, because we knew there were local buses coming till that point, but very, very rare, like once in an hour or something like that. So he took us as far as the city buses went out of town, and we got off, and okay, thanks, and we're going back home. That was my biggest trip on that time, just get out of town, because I was just a child. And we started to walk back home, and waited in bus station, but we waited, bus didn't come. Okay, we take a walk. We walked a little bit again. We didn't know, maybe there are some issues with buses, they never come, so we decided to walk a little bit. I think it wasn't very far, maybe 10 kilometers out of town, but still, we are very young. And when we saw one castle, ruins of one castle, and we went to climb on the castle. So we spent there an hour probably, and we came down and again to bus station, waited again maybe half an hour or hour, I don't remember, but the bus didn't ever came, so we started to walk again. And so it happened, just by bad luck we walked quite a long time until we finally catched the bus which brought us home. But by that time it was very dark. And when I got home, my parents were worried, of course. In the end, we got punished severely, Russia style. So my back was hurting after that for a day, I think. But that was regular punishment, because I wasn't the best boy. It was tradition in Russia. We just punished you physically, or put you stand in the corner, and you know. So I didn't like that, of course, to get punished, but it didn't prevent me from doing crazy things even when I was young. And that's it. That's probably my beginning of my traveling, when I got the virus of wish to go and see the world. And the next big travel, when I escaped my home, I had some little issues with every teenager had, many teenagers actually. Later I met many people who also escaped when we were young. So now I don't feel anything, it was special that I escaped home, but I did a couple of times. Once I escaped, I was hiding in forest for a couple of weeks, living in some camping hut. I don't know how it's called. It's like hunters probably built something. So I went there and I stayed there, and came back home, but my parents also probably not so stupid. They knew, a teenager, you know, he escapes. I think I was like, let me think, like 14, 15, 16, something like that. I escaped for a couple of weeks and came back. But I think even before that already, I started to hitchhike little distances, or after, I don't remember. During that time, anyway, I traveled across all my country. My country is small, ex-Soviet country, not like entire Russia. It's periphery of the Russia. But I traveled hitchhiking many, many times across all the country, summertimes, of course. And during winters, I hitchhiked only when I needed to go to another town, not to pay for a bus ticket. But I was so used to travel and hitchhike, it was just part of my nature. And I remember as soon as I got 18, I got my passport, when I told my mom that, listen, I'm going now to travel to Russia. I don't know how far I go, but the idea is go to see the big Russia. And yeah, one more thing I would say, that I've seen Russia before already, because my mother is Russian, and her parents, her mother actually, lived far away in ex-Soviet country. So we traveled every second year, we traveled with family there by train. And I knew it's beautiful. I knew it's beautiful country, and but I wanted to travel not just by train, but to see everywhere I could go on my own. Because when I traveled with my mom, I was still a teenager, you know. And as soon as I got my passport, I told my mom, now I'm going. I prepared my tent. I didn't have any money, but I was so decisive that I have to go. I have to go, because otherwise I regret that I didn't go later. And it was still Soviet time. I didn't need any extra visa or passport. I was part of Soviet country, Soviet community. And that's it. I went till the border just before the first night. I slept in a tent before crossing the Russian border. And I remember it was cold, because I went very early in the spring. It was close to zero, I think. It was cold, and I didn't have any good clothes. I was just very lightly, like shoes, very simple shoes, very, very simple Soviet time clothes, and a simple, like military style tent, but very low and very, you know, very basic. Nothing like now we have tents. And I built myself a frame, because this tent was meant actually to be built the frame during the camping from wood. But I built an aluminium frame myself for it, which was collapsible. I mean, I could take it apart, I mean. And that was it. That was my tent. And when I slept on that tent first night, I was still thinking, should I go back? Because it was very inconvenient. It was cold. And then I decided, no, I have to go still on. And I don't remember. Perhaps I didn't even sleep because it was cold. And I tried to sleep. I couldn't. So I packed my tent and I walked all night till the morning. And when hitchhiking a car started to pick me up with the first daylight. And that's it. When I went, I had so many travels since that I can't remember anymore exactly where my first trip was. But I think the first trip I went up to Siberia. Anyway, details are not so important. They're important how did I travel, how I managed. In Soviet times, people didn't ask money. I mean, I was very young. I was 18 years old, and every time like car stops, they expected usually that people sometime they give some money, but they didn't demand it. It wasn't never required, like that you pay for a hitchhiker didn't pay. So if a big truck stopped, and even smaller cars, I always first think I said that I'm just a traveler. I don't have any money to pay that. Would you take me? Few times I've been refused, like, you know, we wanted to pick up somebody who could pay because we were in financial difficulty themselves, but that's understandable. So normally they always took. Truck drivers usually, they took me because in Soviet times there weren't any limitation for truck drivers how long they could drive, like there weren't any meters or whatever. Police didn't ask how did you sleep or did you have enough rest, and so they pick up just to talk to somebody to keep them awake because we're getting tired, like sometime more than 24 hours, like driving straight. So then I like in Soviet times we had a lot of anecdotes going around, like funny stories, like jokes going around. I have had thousands of them probably in my memory, and when I told them the funny stories and the anecdotes and they told them back, and we had like time went fast then. And some truck drivers, they kept me for a couple of days because Russia is big, you know, and we like longest trips that I had 2 or 3 days with one same truck because I didn't mind which direction exactly the truck was going. Anywhere in Russia where I could see something new, so important not back direction to home, but important further away, farther to Urals, to Siberia, to Far East. And the longest trip I did was about 3 weeks. Yes, I have to still say country is now is part of Europe, so that's all I can tell. So from European part country, I hitchhiked 3 weeks till Far East. I arrived in 3 weeks to Far East, to Vladivostok. But I did several stops in between, not in one truck, of course. Like I even had some long trips with one group of cars who brought from Europe cars back to Mongolia from Europe. So with one team, I traveled probably 3 days as well. It was in one of my trips. So we brought, we took me, and sometimes we stopped, they cooked outside, and we ate together, and they put me to drive as well. Back then was very simple. You know how to drive? Yeah, okay. I did have a driving license. Yeah, I was 18 already, I had driving license. And do you have driving license? Yes, I do. Okay, good try, I'm tired, you know. So I tried the car, even trucks sometimes. Because, you know, Russia times, nobody really cared. Important is the mission to get accomplished. And they looked at, I was very tall, actually. I looked probably older than I was. And I looked serious, I talked serious. They put me to drive just to have some rest themselves. And, you know, it was fun time. But back then, there were no problems of if somebody was just driving the car and we just trusted people by the look, how we were from Soviet times. And with Mongols who took cars from Europe, it was I think 3 or 4 or maybe more cars. Yeah, we have a group of 3 and they were more cars, but that was funny actually. We looked on the map. There should be a road, but we talked to local peoples somewhere in the middle of Russia, somewhere after Urals, probably close to Russian Asia already. And they looked the map, there should be a road, but the road was almost inexistent or so bad quality that it was just breaking the cars apart. And as they were like 6 people in the group, they started to argue between each other that should they go ahead on this bad road, which was written on the map, but it doesn't really exist, you know. And they talked to locals, and the locals advised to go to other way, which is huge, a bigger way should be to get to some point, maybe 100 kilometers more, but on the better road. and the group split apart. So I went with the team who went the same road, which was written on the map, but the road just ended after a few hundred kilometers. So we had to come back a lot and find another way. So that's a Russia, you know, Soviet Russia. It was like road was on the map, but it didn't really exist. So we were driving like basically having a rally on the side of the road. The road was in the middle, but we had on the both side where already were tracks made by other cars who couldn't drive on this official road, just like 10, 20 meters, 30 meters aside on the field, or the track where people were driving, but it was only possible during the dry season, not when it was raining. And yeah, we had like on parallel several tracks, we had like speed tests and all kind of fun. And finally the car, when we were already out of this bad situation, we went found finally a good road close to, what was the city? I think it was Krasnoyarsk or something like that, Krasnoyarsk rayon. And there was where one of the cars broke down, so they found a bottle of vodka to some local master who made a frame, metal frame to attach the car. Engine broke down, so they attached the car to another one, and they went like on did like that. And the Mongols were actually very friendly and how to say, they wanted to say me, ask me where I want to go. I said I want to go to China, I want to go to Shaolin. And they said, oh, come with us, we are going to Mongolia, so you cross the border, and after Mongolia it's easy to get to China there. My idea was to get to Shaolin Temple to continue practice martial arts there. But then on the border we get into trouble, because I had like a Soviet country passport, and locals were allowed, locals who lived in, close to the border, we were allowed to travel to China actually without any visa. It was, but I wasn't like local there. I had passport of another Soviet country, so they started they let me go because I was very young. They just on the border control, they said, what the fuck is going on there? That they shouted on the Mongols that you are bringing spies into Mongolia. And I think they started even beating like guy in front of everybody, just not hardly, but just pushing and shouting at that we put you in prison, etc., etc. But I don't know what happened to them later, because I was pushed out of there back to Russia, and it was already border control zone there. You wouldn't be allowed to be there without permission of that zone anyway. But they let me go, even without, I think they didn't even put me police or anything, because, you know, it's clearly was visible that I'm a very naive boy there, just want to travel. And I wasn't any spy, but for them was trouble for border control. So we shouted on these Mongols that, fuck, you are bringing spies over here. And anyway, they let me go. I don't know, I really don't know what happened to the Mongols later. Did they have to pay? Probably had to pay some bribes and to get a bit of troubles in. That's how it worked in Russia. I saw it many times. And I was sitting then in a train station. It was in Manchuria. Manchuria, it's after Baikal already. So I was sitting there to get back to the main magistral of Siberian magistral to get to Far East. But the Manchuria side was several hundred kilometers away from magistral. It was in direction to China, to the south. So I had to get back to the north, close to Baikal, and then continue my trip to Far East. So I was sitting in a very quiet zone there, because there is no movement practically on this zone. and no cars, I mean, and locals, we were all going by trains, only few with cars. And the train arrived, actually, from China. And China, they actually, the train was their border stop. They pulled this train, or entire train, up with cranes. And they changed the wheels because the tracks, Chinese tracks and Russia track standards are different. They changed the wheels and the same train basically continued on the Russia side. So I wanted to get on this train, but I didn't get it. I think I didn't get it. Yeah, I helped the Chinese to get the huge bags, like bags, like I think some bags were like 2 meters or 1.5 meters wide and like square, full of shoes and all kinds of. So they were so large that in the passenger train they couldn't get on the train. And I don't remember why were they off the train at all. But anyway, we were in the train station where I was, and they were trying to get with all the big bags and like family, entire family, like several people, onto the train. And the train control were throwing out the bags because they were so big that they blocked the entire tiny passageway of a Russia coupe train and coupe wagons. And I helped them the bags to give them back through a window. So we squeezed the bags through a window into the train again. And they gave me quite a pack of money for that. And for me it was a good for food for a while. And that's a funny story. Like, just people helping each other just to get along with life. They tried to give money also to the wagon keeper, but she couldn't, or he, I don't remember who it was, but they didn't take it because it was too big. The bag, the Chinese bags were too big. Even money wouldn't help them to solve the issues of walking around there. Anyway, so I got hitchhiking back to the rail, to the Amur magistral close to Baikal to continue my trip. But I don't remember which one was first try and which one was second. I think I tried this Manchurian border twice. Yes, I tried it twice because it was so, it was beautiful, the area. That was like Manchuria area, close to the Chinese border. There were no forests, nothing. It was like steppe. And sopkas, it means like hills, but it was all dry, but it was kind of special beauty. I don't know, it's like antique revolution time bridges, iron metal bridges, you know, over the dried riverbeds. And there, they said that even rivers were flow once a year, probably after huge rains. But most of the time they are empty, so it's called wadis, empty riverbeds. And I think it was the second trip when I traveled to the same area. I think I did it because I already had a different passport. I don't remember the reason, but I tried twice the same border actually. And I visited it, you know, just beautiful. So I hitchhiked, and one funny guy was traveling on the bus with whole entire family. He had a like big bus, but private one. So old bus, I mean, not the modern one, but old bus. He kept it for his family trips, and he had a couple family members on this bus, and he took me as a hitchhiker. And it was funny to hitchhike actually there too. I have to tell that as there is dry like steppe or like dry zone, the cars, they don't drive on the same exact track everyone. I was like one track, where car would go. And when I looked from far away, like a few miles away, a few kilometers, many kilometers away, I see that dust cloud is coming to my direction. So I tried to pick up on which track this vehicle is coming to, so I could hitchhike, you know. So I remember that I said, no, it wasn't coming through my track. Another track was a few hundred meters further away, so I was running to another track, waving hand, like I want to get onto a track, and I was worried that maybe they think it's some criminal running there. But anyway, he stopped the bus, and I got on the bus. But why I ended up there at all is because these are so huge areas that the villages are like tens of kilometers away from central driving way. So if somebody wants to go to his village, he just lets me on the middle of nowhere in the steppe, you know, and there's nobody. I'm alone. So basically, I took a huge risk, and there were very few cars going through his zone. And I came off at car. Okay, he goes to his village. I want to go on to a Chinese border, you know. So I hitchhiked around to the other track, and he took me the bus. And when it was the wadi came, wadi is the empty riverbed, and he drove the zone. There were no bridges, and it was just getting closer to a border. Bridges were probably in other location, but he from his village probably he took the shortest way, and he shouted everyone who the bus was very loud, actually, because all the Russian buses, you know, they make a lot of noise. And he shouted everybody hold on, now we're going through a riverbed. And like from a movie, you know, it was he jumped into with high speed, he jumped into downhill to the riverbed. It was like maybe 20-30 meters deep, but it's wide. It was like 50 or 100 meters wide, I remember. But he had to keep a high speed, because he said that if he wouldn't keep up the speed, he wouldn't be able with the crappy bus, he wouldn't be able to get up the hill on the other side of the riverbed, you know, to continue road. So we had two very high jumps, first into the riverbed downhill. And he sped up, I don't know, maybe 100 kilometers an hour or maybe less, but very high speed for that bus, old crappy bus. And when with roaring engine, he went up the hill, and we jumped back to a field, you know. That was like funny memory as well. And but I don't remember, he probably didn't drive me into a border. Yes, he dropped me off somewhere else again, because it was a long trip of hundreds of kilometers to get to a border from Baikal, Lake of Baikal. We were some jeep, some old Russian jeep. They picked me up, and on the second trip, they were careful. I told them that, listen, last time I wasn't left in, I want to go again with a different passport, maybe they let me go to China now. And so we didn't take the risk to bring me up to a cordon there, to border cordon. They let me off, and we went continued to Mongolia, through Mongolia to China. And I went to the cordon myself and ask them officials there, can I go? And I couldn't get in again. So basically, I got back to Baikal, and in Baikal there, there is a Baikalo-Amursky magistral. It's a railway from Baikal to Far East, and I was thinking to hitchhike on the roads, because there were also like roads on the map written. I didn't have any internet or satellite, nothing. Even the cell phones didn't exist that time yet. It was 30 years ago, something. And then I couldn't get any big roads anymore. There weren't any big roads, they were only on the map. So very dirty and muddy roads were there, local roads, and big trucks weren't going these roads anymore. All the cargo was shipped by the trains. So I tried a little bit by local cars, and there were some cars burnt, I remember, on the roads, and military were seeking some escaped criminals and that kind of things I saw there. But it was very beautiful, actually. Nature was very beautiful there. And it was already criminal area, a criminal time. I mean, let me think, first trip I made 93, something like that. It was maybe later trip I saw the criminal activity there. But anyway, I couldn't get on the cars anymore, and there were local motorcycles now. I think it's how we call it, M, just let the M was this motorcycle, very, very heavy and powerful, like a tank, you know, a little motorcycle. Like it was copied, I mean, model from German military motorcycles from Second World War. So this was very powerful motorcycles. We were able to move on these roads. So I was taken on these motorcycles sometimes, and then I saw that it takes like too long time to get to Far East, and the local little village there were cargo trains were moving slowly, so I jumped on the cargo train on platform, and I traveled till Blagoveshchensk. I traveled on cargo trains. And very extremely beautiful. I just can't. It's picturesque. Just if you travel on top of the cargo train on the platform between the things or whatever there were, sometimes even empty platforms. If you travel on them and see entire nature, not like from window, but you see all around you a beautiful Siberian forest. It was extremely beautiful. So anyway, I got off in Blagoveshchensk, and I remembered that Blagoveshchensk was actually the city where my mother was born, and I wanted to see the city around, the beautiful city there. But I tried to get from there to China as well. In Blagoveshchensk, it's a border town with China. Across the river is a Heihe. Heihe is the Chinese town. Recently I heard they have built the bridge. If I remember right, they built just a few years ago a bridge there. Now it's a bridge there. Back then it wasn't. It was just local ships were going there to China. And local people were again visa-free going to China, and Chinese visa-free going to the local Russia town. Only locals, not foreigners. I mean, not other Soviet areas. And I wanted to get there anyway. I couldn't get there legally, so what I did, I found a ship which was obviously for me. It was cargo was meant for China. It was like combines like a big tractor for field for collecting the crop, you know. So it was loaded all on the ship. On the, it's not even ship, it's like attached to ship kind of I don't know how we call it. And it was loaded all with the combines with the tractors, and I hid my I went into a how we call it shipyard, and of course secretly during the night cover, and looked that nobody's around, nobody sees you, and like a spy. And I hid myself between the combines. I actually went into one of the big crop collecting combines and hid them on the sharp some conveyor onto that. So I put some clothes under me that the pigs wouldn't scratch me too much, and I lied down there. I hope okay, in the morning the ship goes. and I'll be on China, and in China I'll come off. But that didn't happen, so I waited there till another night, I think. And it was burning. It was the sharp started to, because it still moved a little bit, and they started to go through the clothes, sharp peaks, and on the conveyor, and started to go into my body and hurt me. So I decided no, I wouldn't be able to stand another night there, another day. And you have to take, of course, pee as well. So I did the same thing right there. And I came off a combine very quietly, like a spy, like centimeter by centimeter, not to make any noises, to see around, that didn't bring attention, because the port was, the shipyard was still, the lights were on, projectors were on. I couldn't very freely move there. It wasn't completely dark. So I came off, and the thinking, should I go away or go back traveling on, or still try to go to China? So I looked around what my options are, and I found on the same platform hole, metal hole. And I quietly opened it and went in and put the hole in. I put the cover back in carefully and went inside there. And completely dark, but I had lamp, pocket lamp. So I hid me inside and decided, okay, I'll stay for another day there, and maybe I'll get to China then. And basically, I heard during the day all kind of noises, and I was thinking already, okay, the ship is now arrived to China. Till next night, I decided that, okay, now I'm gonna look, where am I? And it was a lot of noises. I mean, entire day, it was some movement going on, and I heard dogs walking on top, because it's very loud, everything you hear, every movement you hear on the ship, and on the empty trum, it's in Russia. Anyway, you hear inside all the noises, and I was worrying that maybe dogs are like smelling something and coming after me, but they didn't. So after the noises, all the went quiet. I went for many hours. I watched the clock. I had hand watch and watched what time is it. It's like maybe 2 or 3 o'clock at night. I started to make move, but I didn't come out from the same hole where I went in. I was in another area of a ship already, and I started just carefully. I put my legs. I found a place to push with my head the cover. It was like 1 meter wide, or yeah, about 1 meter wide, I think, was the cover. But it was heavy, it was metal cover, there weren't any handles, it was just put lightly on top of a hole. And the heavy cover, I started to push with my head, to just to look what's going on there. And I remember I had a little hole pushed out like 2 centimeters, maybe 3 centimeters, to see what's going on there. And I didn't see any combines anymore, like all were gone. I said, oh, now I arrived in China, you know, they already emptied the cargo arrived. But that was my first thought. When I little bit moved more the cover, a little bit more wider, and it made some creaking sound. And I stopped, just in case, maybe somebody hears around. And I looked around with eyes, only with eyes. I looked left, right, and I saw feet, boots, standing right in front of a hole. Like in a movie, absolutely, you know, it was crazy. And I couldn't put back the cover neither, because I knew that if a metal touches the ship, it makes a bang, you know. But the creaking sound, of course, it's with empty ship, it's you don't clearly know where it comes from. Actually, the guy didn't realize that it was just right behind him, behind his feet. And I looked at the boots and I decided, no, I'm gonna like millimeter by millimeter lower down the cover. And I did it. It's very, very long, like maybe 5 or 10 minutes, like very slowly, slowly. I was all sweating and, you know, I didn't want to make any noise. And I put my fingers in the last millimeter to make it very, very quiet, to put the metal, heavy metal cover, to put it back. And I succeeded without loud noises. And when I sat there, I couldn't move. I didn't want to make any steps, any movement, that would, any sound would come accidentally, or drop anything, or light, or whatever. So I was just standing with my head touching the cover still, and I waited very long time. It felt very long, maybe like 15 minutes, maybe half an hour, until I heard that the steps were going away. The guy who was standing there watching, probably he was facing the hall where I went in. I suspect, that's just in my head. I don't know, maybe the dog smelled, because I heard during the day that there was dog going there around. Maybe the dog heard the or smelled the somebody where it went in, gave them sign, and maybe they didn't want to risk to get attacked, to get into there. But I suspect the guy was just waiting me facing the other hall that I come back from there. He was standing there almost whole night. Anyway, he went away at 3 or 4 o'clock at night. I think he went away either. I don't know what to do, but I didn't take any chances. As soon as I heard he went away, I waited another like 15 minutes. I didn't want anyone to come back. it would be over. So I just pushed away carefully the cover and I left the port as invisibly as possible I could. But I was actually in a plane projector light all the time when I was walking away, because the port was all illuminated. I just made a face that I'm just a worker. I don't care. Night shift, doesn't matter. I was just walking with a straight face and a calm walk. And when I got out of the port, over the fences, of course, I wouldn't go to gates, you know. But I wasn't still sure. It was nighttime. I wasn't still sure that if I'm in Russia or am I in China already. I didn't see any shops or any signs, anything. So it was just a port area. And I saw a couple of guys walking by. I also heard them speaking Russian. But you never know. Maybe they are just visiting China. So I asked them that, excuse me, am I in where I am? I don't remember if I asked if I'm in China. Probably not. What city I am, I asked them. And they said it's the surprised faces, but said it's Blagoveshchensk, you know. And they said, okay, thank you. Oh no, I'm just lost, you know. And then I was a bit disappointed that I wasn't in China. But later on, I decided that it was probably good luck that I didn't get to China. I would have been in trouble there, probably. I could get into prison for crossing the bridge illegally, crossing the border illegally. But anyway, so when I continued to hitchhike on, no, I took a train. I took a train, continued to direction to far east to Vladivostok. So I couldn't find any platforms on local trains, the cargo trains there, and I think by schedule I didn't want to wait the passenger train to try to get without ticket there. That was another way I used this traveling way. But I jumped onto one ladder on the behind of one of the high wagons, and there were many high wagons. All the train was high wagons. I think I couldn't find any platform. It was moving in direction to where I wanted to go, to Vladivostok from Blagoveshchensk. And then I grabbed myself and said, okay, next stop I come down. But then that just happened, that big storm came and started to pour rain, and every village or every city it passed, it moved very slowly, but I couldn't see anything. It was so dark, like so heavy rain was coming. So I was hanging on the ladder there back for many, many hours. I mean, it was, I didn't get really actually tired, and I remember it was tired, it was just very cold, because I was hanging conveniently. I put my hands over, across my hands and legs comfortably on the ladder, but I still had to hold on. I couldn't sleep or anything, and it completely cold. I was shivering there at, because from the top of a train, when the train moved slowly, all the rain was coming on my back, you know, on my head. And then after many, many hours, the daylight started to come up already. On some small village train station, I could finally jump off a train, because in the dark I didn't take the risk. And then I came off and I went to a train station and I fell asleep. I was just, I don't know this word, I was shivering, I was having nightmares, really. I clamped, I was sitting in waiting room, like in a chair, but clamped my back that nobody could steal it, and I slept head on my back. And I remember it was very, very like illness, like really a shivering and fever. And maybe it was because of stress subconsciously, but maybe because of cold, everything together anyway. And I wasn't scared. I did crazy stuff before, so it was just physical stretching was a little bit too much for me from cold and everything. So anyway, I had nightmares and shivering, but after that it was gone. I whole night, whole day, or I don't remember it was day or night, but anyway, for many hours I was just having waking up and going to sleep, waking up, going to sleep, and it was nightmare. Seeing nightmares of everything, I don't remember what, but it was terrifying sleep. And but I next day I was all right, so I continued my trip. And during there was one interesting story more. I found another platform cargo train. I went to platform and I fell asleep. I was still tired. I fell asleep on the cargo train, and the platform was almost empty, but it was very convenient, a nice place to lie down and sleep. And sun came out after the rain, so I dried a little bit. And anyway, one moment, somebody is pushing me on my legs, and I opened my eyes, and there was a gun on my head. And guy was having two hands on his gun, and all I remember, it wasn't regular like Russian Makarov, like with dark black. It was shiny, very shiny, and maybe better gun. I don't know which model it was, but it was a big gun anyway, a big handgun. And he held it in direction to my head and said, "Stand up, come with me." He was in plain form, but I understood by his actions, but he's a policeman, you know, so militia was back then. He was a militia man, and he took me to a local militia station, and they checked my bags, and I explained them, I'm traveling, I'm hitchhiking, etc., etc. You know, Russia, they're very simple people. But right at this moment, somebody called on the phone, and the other guy picked the phone. And how I found actually was that there are the control stations, like platforms, when cars are passing, trains are passing, though they can see from the top some like military zones where passing. There are military controls from high above. They see all the trains who are passing, but nobody's hiding there on trains. And they check also from below on some train station. But anyway, they saw me from the top, but I was sleeping there. So that's how that's why he approached me. And anyway, somebody was calling to a police station, and the guy told, who picked up the phone, he told to the guy who was talking to me right now that one of his guys was killed that night. And he was just very short. He asked which direction I came from with my train. And I came from another direction, luckily. I wasn't coming from where the other Pastavoy, I think, was killed, or somebody there was killed anyway. And so he, the guy was so nice, he actually, the policeman, he took me back to the same train. He put me back exactly how I was. He told me, you haven't seen anything, nothing has happened to you, you sleep here, you close your eyes for several hours. Until you are out of here, and we haven't seen you. That's it. And he didn't fill any forms or anything in police station. He just brought me back to the same train, and they let me go. So that was a nice experience. It could have ended very bad if I was, by unlucky coincidence, coming from another direction with that train. I could have been under investigation for a long time there. Anyway, I got to Vladivostok finally with many stories to tell, and I will tell continue from how what I did in Vladivostok. I tried also crazy things. I tried to get to Japan on a cargo ship, but not legally, of course. I tried to jump it again on a cargo port. But how I didn't succeed and how I came back to my country, and I will continue on the next part. So that's it. That's the introduction, that how my crazy life, and what my friends were telling, that you should write a book, but haven't written a book about it. I've written actually several books on different topics, mostly scientifically more related, so I don't have more much time to write just the stories. I just take the time to tell it right now on podcast. Maybe one day I'll write a book as well with more details. So that's it. Enough for this introduction, and I hope it was interesting, and I hope it will be even more interesting to hear what happened in Vladivostok back there over 30 years ago, and over 25 years ago. And how I came back, and what happened on my way back through all of Russia. I didn't come back straight line. I made a little course across Russia in different areas to have it more interesting, to see more of the Russia. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I will continue later on.